Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to thank and pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Room by Room, the Home Organization Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Gabriella Yastra, coming to you from NAM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's begin. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our show. Today, we're going to be talking about conscious consumption, unraveling the perils of overconsumption and embracing responsible practices. And I'm going to be talking to Nina Gabor, who is the founder of EcoStyles, sustainable fashion educator, speaker, and writer. Hi, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be talking with you today.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great episode because lots of really great things that we're, I love fashion. I love buying stuff, but I think that, it's been weighing on my mind the fact that, it's not great for the environment. So I'd love to learn how we can, wind it back a little bit, but maybe also, be a bit more thoughtful about what we're doing. So thank you so much. But before we do get started on our topic today, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you and why you're here today.
Right. So my name is Nina Gabor, as you mentioned. I work in the space of fashion sustainability. So I'm a sustainable fashion educator and advocate for a healthier fashion industry that's better for the environment and better for humans that work in the environment and use clothing, which is pretty much almost everyone in the world, if not everyone. So I teach, I run classes and workshops. I do a lot of speaking events. I run clothes swaps, and I design programs within the sustainability and circular economy space to educate people, but also give people solutions as much as possible, holistic solutions to close the gap in circularity so that we're reusing, we're recycling, and we're, as much as possible, we're minimizing how much we manufacture and produce and put out in the world, and also how much we consume, because we have way more stuff in the world than we need, and it has an impact on the environment, on biodiversity. So, yeah. But
great.
At the same time, it's doing all of this and helping people do it in a way that they're as stylish as they possibly want to be. So we don't compromise on style in this process.
Yes. I think we might discuss this a little bit later, but I think there is, at least in my mind, this idea that, if you're going to be conscious, there's a certain style that goes along with it that maybe isn't necessarily what everyone wants to look like.
Yeah.
Or that you look very threadbare because you're reusing everything.
So that's a common misconception, right? That's a stereotype of sustainable fashion. And if you look at my Instagram or my website, I do everything to debunk that myth, right? You don't have to compromise on style and beauty and design, just in order to be sustainable, right? So my style is very loud, very colorful, very bright, and it's varied as well. It's quite eclectic, right? So, and part of I look that way because I absolutely love it. But at the same time, it's about showing people, so people like slap me on the street when I go into like workplaces and stuff like that. Like, what is that outfit? Like, where did you get that from? And it gives me such pride to say I bought a secondhand at a thrift store, at an op shop, at a charity shop, and they're like, wow. And that's always an opportunity to educate people, not necessarily stand there and give them a lecture, but to say, by the way, do you know we're manufacturing this amount of clothes and what it's doing to the environment? And they're like, oh, is that why you op shop? I'm like, yeah, and it gets them thinking. So it's not only being a siren, a stylish siren, it's also a way to show people that there are better ways of doing what they love. And in fact, if you shop secondhand, you get access to this massive plethora of clothing from different fashion eras, right? And you get to pick and choose and create your own vibe, express your own vibe, express your own feel. So you might be someone, for example, who likes stuff from the 70s, but you also obviously like things that are of this contemporary, right? So you get to take a few pieces from the 70s and combine it with some more modern stuff and be like, yeah, this is me. This feels right for me. You don't have to follow fashion trends. In fact, do not ever follow fashion trends because that leads to more waste. My message is about expressing who you are, living your truth, but doing it through secondhand and also clothes that are manufactured sustainably, even if they are new, right? With the environment in mind.
So I'm really looking forward to having this conversation and talking more about fashion and sustainability. But before we do, we're going to do a section we call Have You Met Nina, where we get to know you through some of your favorite things. So the first thing that I'd like to know is, what is your favorite book?
My favorite book is a book called David and Goliath. Not the one in the Bible, although it's a reference to it. This one is by an author called Malcolm Gladwell. And it's different stories within the book talking about real life stories, truths, including the original David and Goliath story, but also about how people, ordinary people, the Davids of the world, have conquered, you know, big giants that were doing horrible things in the world, whether they were like, you know, oppressors of some sort of people, or you know, Martin Luther King would be an example of a David who changed the world, you know, conquered Goliath, and, you know, specific stories of things he did. So, or people, you know, who go against big, you know, oil companies, you know, that are ruining communities, like Aaron Brockovich would be an example. So that book really inspires me and to do what I do and keep going, not just in my career, but in my daily life, when I know that something is right and I feel it intuitively, feel it in my gut, to stick with it regardless of whether, you know, in the moment I'm being supported in that or not. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a great book. And I think it's so, it's very relevant to our topic today, because often I think that the perception is, you know, I'm just one person. What kind of environmental impact can I have? But it's not just about, I guess, what we're all doing individually, but, you know, knowing that we can, in fact, take on some of those, you know, big corporations. So thank you for sharing that book. Is there a movie you've enjoyed recently?
Oh my gosh. I'm a movie buff, so that's always a hard question. But I'll go with one. Which is, I think, an all-time favorite, all-time classic, which is The Wizard of Oz. It's just such a beautiful story, and there's so many life lessons in that. And I started watching it, obviously, as a young child and obsessed with it. But even as an adult, when I watch it, it unfolds some gems that I didn't pick up as a child. So it's like every stage of my life, it has something for me that I need. And there's so much power in that. For example, you know, the main story is that, you know, you had a lion, a tin man, a scarecrow, and a girl who were each wanted something so deeply in their life that they felt it would complete them in that moment and make them happy. And they go through this long journey, all for the, you know, go through hell and conquer their worst fear, which is the witch. All for the wizard to tell them that the thing that you're looking for, you already have it. You know, the scarecrow wants a brain. He was like, you needed a brain to do what you do. Are you kidding? Nobody could conquer the witch for centuries, and look at what you just did. Or, you know, the tin man who wanted a heart. He was like, look, the love you found that caused you to cooperate and work with these people, you have love, you have that heart. And it was all these lessons of realizing that sometimes our fears are actually, or our mindsets are actually blocking us from the truths of ourselves and keeping us from being who we want to be or achieving what we want to achieve. And that was such a realization for me, that the person I wanted to be, you know, like 5-6 years ago, the person that I am now, I thought I could never be, but I had all the tools already. Nothing really changed. I didn't do a degree or a course to learn how to be confident or speak in front of a big crowd. I could have done that already. I just believed that I couldn't, you know? So I just, that movie for me is like everything. So yeah,
that's a great lesson. I think it's true for everyone. Everyone's wants to be a bit different and they want to make a change in their life, but often we're so scared to actually make that move. When actually, you know, if we really wanted something, most of the time we could probably do it.
Yeah, we absolutely can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. And do you have a role model?
I have several for different things and at different stages of my life, but I think one that hit me a lot when I was a child was a woman I read about. I grew up in the US and every February we'd have Black History Month. And there was a woman named Harriet Tubman, who I believe is not celebrated enough. Her story is like unbelievably phenomenal. I think most people in the world now know that, you know, about the slavery, how it happened in the US over, you know, more than 400 years ago. They stole people from Africa and made them into slaves to build the country. And, you know, generations on, there's this woman, I think, I forget the year she was born, I think 18, but she was born into slavery. And she escaped as a Black woman, escaped. And not only did she escape and make it to freedom, she got her hands on a shotgun, came back, and made, I think, up to 7 or more trips to free each member of her family, plus many other slaves, about 77 slaves. Now, for a Black woman in the 1800s, to be able to do this 7 times, not only shows her courage in escaping and getting to freedom, but to have such love and compassion and courage to come back so many trips, which is extremely risky to free so many people. And not only that, she eventually became a spy for the US Army and led an expedition that saved a further 700 slaves. So in her lifetime, she freed about 770 people. She advocated for human rights, women's rights, just unbelievable courage. This is a superhuman level, right? And particularly at that during that era. So she's been someone who inspires me again to do a lot of work, because it's, you know, things get hard, as you know, in life. And I think to myself, look, this is a woman when there was no internet, she had nothing, and she did all of this. So who am I to complain that I'm tired or I'm cold or I don't have enough money and all of that stuff? So I think that's overall, I have a lot of heroes, but she's one that I think, you know, just kind of is above the rest because of what she achieved.
That's amazing. I've heard her name, but I've not really looked at her story. So that's amazing. I mean, it's one thing to save yourself, but it's another thing to go back into danger and, you know, find the people that you love and rescue them, and also save people you don't necessarily know.
And this, there was huge bounty on her head, by the way.
Oh,
so
wow.
What would have been the equivalent of about close to $1 million back then? Because they knew what she was doing, so the bounty kept increasing. Yet she risked, so you can imagine all the people that were looking for her. Yes, she still continued to risk her life to do this.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. So after that, you know, amazing role model, let's learn more about what we're going to be talking about today, which is conscious consumption. But I do like to start off with a few definitions. The first thing I'd like to know is, how do you define home organization?
Home organization is another term I would use for it is having a working life, a workable life, because everything starts at home. I believe if your home is messy and cluttered, it's going to somehow manifest in the rest of your life. I know it's a weird concept, but I believe it to be true. So harmonization is basically having everything in your home sorted in a way that it's easily accessible, clean, tidy, and you know where everything is, right? And your home is organized in a way that you don't invest a lot of time in the little functions of life, because things are put back where they're supposed to be. And it allows you to, every other aspect of your life to function in a way that you feel serene, you feel safe, and there's less chaos, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I imagine that, you know, consumption comes into this in the sense that if you're buying lots of things, you have to put them somewhere. So we know what, I think we all know what consumption is, but what is conscious consumption?
All right, conscious consumption is buying or acquiring things with the mindset of how you're going to use it and what you're going to do with it at the end of life of that item or that product, right? Hmm. And not only that, thinking about who made the product, how it was made, with as little or as much environmental damage as possible, and also thinking about the labor and supply chain involved in that material or product, right? Like making sure the workers that in manufacturing or the farmers who grew the product were paid a livable wages. And also in addition to that, whether there were toxic chemicals involved in the process or not, which not only affects the environment, but also affects our health in the short or long term. So that's what conscious consumption is, okay, in a nutshell.
So it's sort of looking at the whole life cycle of the product you're buying.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Saying, you know, am I okay with buying something that is harming someone else? Am I okay with discarding this afterwards? Like, how can I discard this afterwards?
Precisely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, we tend to forget ourselves in that questioning. How is this going to harm me in the long term, right? So like a lot of products have toxic chemicals in it, but we don't know, you know, and because we have a habit in our culture of just, you know, if we consume something or wear something, use something, if we don't fall over and die that next moment, we're like, yeah, it's fine. Never mind that it's leaching out some toxic carcinogenic chemicals that, you know, could lead to a slow and very painful death in a few years, but that's all right. It's not right now, so it's cool.
Do you have any examples of that?
Okay, so PFAS is a chemical, forever chemical. Well, PFAS, there's still research being done on it, but we know that, fashion, a lot of fashion is made from synthetics, which are plastics, which are derived from fossil fuels, right? And a common example is polyester. Over about 65% of clothes are made with synthetics, right? And the thing is they release microfibers. These, you know, when you wash clothes or you use a dryer, those little tiny fibers, some of those are visible, but there are a big portion of it is not visible. Now, what happens with plastics is that they attract and retain chemicals. And a lot of chemicals are toxic. And these microfibers are getting back into our bodies through the air, through our water, you know, through everything. And imagine those toxic chemicals, they're retaining and accumulating within our systems, right? That can lead to not only different cancers, but it's been known to lead to like liver damage, hormone disruptions, fertility issues, ADHD, so many different, you know, allergies, skin irritations, so many different issues. And it's accumulation of it. So again, it doesn't happen immediately, but the accumulation over a period of time leads to different ailments. And what sucks about that is that we can't directly link it back to the microplastics, but it is a big contributor as well as other pollutants. But that's a pretty big one because I think 35% of the microplastics in oceans, in water, in the air come from clothing or textiles. So it's a major issue. It's a major problem.
Okay. So yeah, that's scary. Like,
I can see that's got your brain thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. This is supposed to be a fun and exciting podcast. And I'm just bringing like these horrible statistics that you're going to die if you wear fashion. Wasn't meant to be like that. And no, that's not exactly. Exactly, just like that. Yeah.
I guess the thing is that it's kind of avoidable, like, unavoidable, because, you know, I think unfortunately we've already produced a lot of this plastic. we're not going to be able to get rid of it, I presume, or it's going to be very difficult to. So how, like, I'm guessing it's more about the minimization and the reduction. So how can we go about that?
Yeah, so the cool part is that the more you wash clothes, the less microfibers or microplastics it releases. So again, that secondhand angle is really good. But we also need to like ask fast fashion brands in particular and big brands to manufacture less clothing, because like there's only like 8 billion of us on the planet. We don't need 150 billion clothes being made every year. We don't need it. And the thing is like 87% of that is going to landfill anyway. So it's not even like we're using it. We can't use that much clothing. Like how many outfit changes can you do in a day to use your portion of, I don't know, whatever 150 billion garments is divided by 8 billion people? That's a lot of like every 10 minutes you gotta change. So I think we need to ask brands to manufacture less, right? Far, far less. And then we need to go with secondhand and reuse the stuff we have. Like love the stuff we have. You know, a lot of us have amazing clothes already. It's just a question of like falling back in love with it and being creative with it, you know? So, yeah.
Do you think it's a matter of, you know, fast fashion manufacturers buying or making less clothing? Or do you think it's a matter of us buying less clothing that would tell them that it would reduce the, like they should reduce their, how much, the quantity of clothing that they're producing?
It's both. It goes hand in hand, you know? So I get this question asked to me a lot. Is it, you know, consumers need to be, some people feel consumers need to be the ones, but I feel it's the brands, because we have the issue of extreme capitalism. They use the Kylie Jenners and the Kim, and I'm not disrespecting these people. I'm just saying they have such huge influence, right? The Kim Kardashians to promote their brands. You have young impressionable minds, you know, you have young people who are just coming up and figuring stuff out. They're, and not just about young people, even people, you have convenience, right? So people have lives, people have families. They can't, you can't think about, with all the issues in the world, you can't be constantly having to spend so much time researching this stuff. So it's up to the brands to be responsible, I think, because they're the ones doing the manufacturing. People too need to be responsible, but I think it's mostly up to the brands, because they use so many millions and millions of dollars in advertising budgets to make people believe they need this fashion, or make people believe they need these clothes when they don't, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of manipulation in the process. So we definitely, I think the bigger responsibility lies with the brands, and then people also need to take accountability. So, yeah.
Yeah, it does seem to me a little bit, I guess, unfair to say to, I don't know, a 16-year-old, you shouldn't buy so much clothing because it's damaging the environment. A 16-year-old, they don't understand all of these things. They haven't had time, I guess, to learn, and they just want whatever's coolest. Whereas, you know, the fast fashion companies, they're doing this, as you said, on purpose, you know, doing the advertising so that people want to buy these things. So, yeah I think I see how it's, a two-pronged approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do know 14-year-olds who are absolute advocates for sustainability in clothing. But I think a lot of young people aren't aware yet. Some are aware and they don't care, and that's just life, how life is. But at the same time, I think if the more people are aware, the more people, the quicker way, the shortcut is to advocate for brands to manufacture less. If enough people did that, then I think it'd be a quicker route to solving the problem. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked a little bit about the environmental and social impacts of overconsumption. Was there anything else that, you know, you wanted to say on that? Or we're going to get down to the meat of the topic today, which is what else can we do to...
Sure.
Was there anything else?
Well, I think in terms of the environmental impact, I just wanted to say in general, overall, the environmental impact is that, you know, there's a lot of, in manufacturing so many clothes, a lot of plant species are being lost. A lot of deforestation is happening to grow cotton, for example, to grow denim, which we wear once or not at all and then throw away. a lot of fresh water is being used up. So it takes about 2,700 liters of water to make one cotton t-shirt. And that's enough drinking water for a person, I think, in about 3 years. So yeah, to make one t-shirt. So imagine there are a lot of water resources. And this is happening in communities in countries in the global south where this water is a life resource for them, right? So a lot of these communities are losing water, having to walk lots of kilometers just to get water because we're using up their water resource to make denim, or we're poisoning the water resource because we have factories there that use toxic chemicals or just chemicals, even if they're not toxic, but then they pour it back, the wastewater, which is the water after manufacturing that's left over, pour it back into their lakes and rivers. And you see the water is blue. This is the water they have to use to drink, to cook, to bathe, and everything else. And what's happening in these communities is that they're getting cancers, birth defects, and all these issues because of fast fashion. Now, that's the community. Not to mention the garment workers who make the products are not being paid livable wages. They work like 18-hour days, and they get like, in a, you know, maybe like $1 or $2. They can't feed themselves and their families. So this is the human side of it, social justice side of it. On the environmental side, like I mentioned, deforestation, water pollution, but also things like, animals are becoming extinct. We know that, right? So this is contributing to biodiversity loss on the side of animals, where we're contributing to more and more animals becoming extinct because we're using up their habitats, destroying their habitats so that we can farm or grow crops to make clothes that we're disposing of. So I just wanted to clarify the general impacts of the fashion industry before we move on.
Yeah. So that's a huge impact that overconsumption is having on our environment, and that we're having on our environment, and also on other people and their livelihood and their well-being. So there's definitely an impetus to improve. So you've mentioned a few things about how to, you know, improve our consumption. So you mentioned like secondhand clothing. So I don't know, when I go to my op shops or thrift stores, I don't see that much stuff that I like. So do you have any tips for like how to, I don't know, get better at buying secondhand clothes? Where do you source your clothes?
Sure. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just like retail stores. There's some op shops you go to that are your vibe and some have nothing for you, you know? My suggestion is try different ones in different areas. Ask people who op shop in, you know, the town you live in, like where are some good ones to go to, right? But it's not just op shopping. You can host clothes swaps. I've been hosting clothes swaps for over 12 years. Anyone can contact me with links on how to host your own clothes swap. I'll send that to you. And the thing about clothes swaps is that what it is that everyone has clothes that are in good condition, good quality, that they're not using, right? Either you've lost weight, put on weight, or you're just bored of them. So you bring 5 good quality clothes, or it could be 3, it could be 1, it doesn't matter. And everyone brings their own clothing. And basically we create a pool of like a boutique and people just shop for free. So you're basically bringing stuff of yours that you don't want and taking up home other people's clothes that work for you in that moment, right? They're what you want, what you need in your own life. So that one saves you money from buying new stuff and keeps stuff from going to landfill and keeps stuff in circularity for longer. So you don't have to do it as an event, although you can. You can have a picnic where, you know, you have a picnic and people also bring these clothes. So while people can go around people's picnic blankets and choose stuff they like, or, you know, you can have, you know, when you have a girls, well, it doesn't have to be girls, but a night at home, a movie night, whatever, you can have a rack where people can bring stuff, you know, hang stuff on the rack and everyone can just take stuff they like. It doesn't matter who brought it, right? So there's so many different ways of doing that. So clothes swapping is one. And then restyling is another. So restyling is using one garment in multiple ways for multiple types of occasions. I can send you pictures of what that looks like. So
yes, please.
Yeah. So basically, like I do events where I have a model and I'll demonstrate how to use one dress. And I usually use a plain black dress and use that plain black dress for different types of occasions. So in front of the audience, we'll go from the office girl, right? Just plain black look, someone who looks like they're working in the office, all the way through to Melbourne Cup look, what I call work to wine transition. So work to wine is like, you know, you go to work and you have drinks with the girls, you're going to an art gallery or a cocktail, and in 2 minutes, you're going to transform the look. We go to like date night, brunch look, student grungy vibe, just different, completely different looks, all using this black dress. You don't have to use a black dress. You can use a floral, any color type garment, pants, a shirt. And the idea is that instead of buying something new whenever you have an event or occasion, look at the stuff you have in your wardrobe and think of how you can make the new and different combinations to create the look that you want for that occasion. Because we all know whenever we get that invitation to a wedding from that mean girl in high school, we're like, oh, I'm going to show everybody in high school that I'm successful now. I'm doing well now. And you go out and spend like hundreds, maybe even $1,000 on a brand new outfit, which looks great. And you wear it once. And after the Instagram is done, it just sits in the back of the closet for years and years. Everyone has that one dress they wore to an event or a wedding or something. And, you know, and instead of doing that, just take something you have and just work with it, you know, create something new. So yeah, that's restyling. Markets are a good place to shop, secondhand markets. You can go online. There's Depop, eBay. There's so many secondhand apps now. Poshmark. What do we have in Australia? There's Vestiaire. So many different secondhand platforms that you could use that are both, you know, high-end luxury as well as, you know, cheaper fast fashion stuff that's secondhand, right? So there's a lot out there.
Okay. I use Facebook Marketplace a lot for just browsing things.
Love it. Love it.
I'm always a little bit skeptical of clothing though. I don't know, because you can't try it on. I don't know. I'm always a bit wary of that. Which is silly because I do love op shopping.
Yeah. No, it's, I think with op shopping, it helps to kind of know where to go, ask around, go online and just Google top 10 op shops in whatever city you're in and see if someone's done a blog post, you know?
Oh, yeah. Great idea.
Mm-hmm.
So what about, you know, I'm sure other people have been in the same situation. I have, you know, jeans that are out of date a little bit. I don't really like wearing them anymore. And they're not really good enough to give away or do like a clothing swap. Is there a way I can like change them, reuse them for something so that I'm not just throwing it away?
Yeah, absolutely. You can upcycle them if you have the skills. Yeah, there are a lot of like upcycling workshops that people do, little classes and workshops. Again, Google and see if there's one nearby. You can go on YouTube or even just Instagram and see, get ideas, creative ideas for what people have done. So sometimes there might be a hole. I know people like holes in jeans, but maybe, you know, there might be something, a hole in an area that you don't want. So people have done really creative things, like they'll put like badges or buttons or take pieces of other fabric and creatively like put it over that in a cool way that makes the jeans, just give the jeans a whole new level, right? So there's so much you can do. Again, just if you go online and put it into YouTube, you just get so many ideas for little ways that you can work around something. And it's not only like with stuff that, you know, doesn't look good anymore or it's not, you feel it's not wearable. Sometimes it's just if you're bored with something, you have something, you're just bored of it. You can, again, go online and see creative ideas of things that people have done to give that garment a second life, right? So, yeah.
So I live in an area where this is actually quite common, where people, I think, wear their clothes for quite a long time. They, you know, do things like they change things up. And my favorite thing is to walk down the train station and just, they're all going to work, you know, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. And just picking out the one thing that sort of sets them as that they live in this area. Because I'm always like, oh, they're wearing Doc Martens. They've got cuffed jeans. This person has the coolest outfit that I've ever seen. But it is a certain look. It's, you can tell that they're all from one area. What happens if that's not your style? Like, how can you consume and how can you have clothes that you like if that's not your style?
So I'm a big advocate for living your truth and wearing what makes you happy, what expresses who you are. So do not follow trends. Do not follow what everybody else is doing in your area just because they're doing it. You are an individual. Very close to speak to your individuality. So what you can do if everybody's wearing the same thing in your area is source your clothing from a different area. Mm-hmm. You know, op shop on the other side of town, right? That has a vibe that is what you want to wear, you know? Again, host a clothes swap, not in your area, right? Try and host it somewhere else, or do it in a way, even if you're hosting in your area, do it in a way that you invite people from different places so that you have a mix. And that might even be good for people in your area to try something different, you know? So you have the courage to try something different. So that's definitely something you can do. Expand your areas of finding really cool pieces. Go online, you know, to the sources we mentioned. That's always a good thing to do.
Okay. And is there a way of buying new clothes that is still, you know, where you're still being mindful, or is it just secondhand?
No, definitely new clothes from brands that manufacture sustainably and ethically. You know, their platforms, their apps like Good On You that you can download on your phone to see. And again, here's the thing with the sustainable fashion world. It's not perfect. It's a relatively new, shall I say, industry. Mm-hmm. So a lot is still being figured out. And the movement came about because, you know, something needed to be done about the fashion industry. So there are definitely teething problems. So no system is 100% perfect. However, apps like Good On You can give you sometimes a little bit of a can give you a pretty good clue on brands that are manufactured sustainably or not. So you use that as a sort of yardstick to when you're shopping. And also you can do your own research, you know, look at the website of the brand and see if they have a sustainability policy. And the thing is, a sustainability policy, it's not when they say, oh, we believe in sustainability, and they use buzzwords like eco-friendly, green. No. Sustainability policies, are they transparent about how many clothing they're manufacturing every year? Right? And are they transparent about the factories and the countries and specific, are they very specific about who is making the clothing? What factory in Cambodia? What's the name? Who are the people? If they don't have that, then you can kind of go, okay, there's not transparency within their supply chain. If they have a take back scheme, like, oh, we take back our clothing because we're sustainable, we don't want it to go to landfill. Are they transparent about what happens when they take it back? You know, because you have brands like H&M and many other Zara that have done take back schemes because they're sustainable. And they found out that they're just dumping those clothes in Chile at the Atacama Desert.
Oh.
Yeah, there are mountains of fast fashion dumped there. And guess what? It's visible from space. They have satellite images of this clothing. So
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's called greenwashing. So don't trust brands just because they say they're sustainable, right? If they're not transparent about how much they're manufacturing every year, they're not transparent about, again, who's making their clothes specifically, where, and the names of the factories, then feel free to be skeptical about them.
So, I've been tricked like that before where I've, you know, bought some clothes. I've like looked at their website. Oh, we're sustainable. I'm like, oh, great. And then I have seen the website good on you before, and I've looked them up. I'm like, oh, they're actually not very good. But I find that the clothing that is available that is, you know, top rated ethically generally is very expensive and very has a specific style. So, you know, are there some things which are more important, you know, if they're maybe not 100% transparent, but they're still pretty good? Is it okay, I guess, to dip off the 5 out of 5 stars?
So here's the thing. The higher, the better. I mean, obviously, you want to support brands that are 100% doing the right thing. If you can, if you have the option to, I'd go for the brand doing the right thing. However, the system is not perfect. There are some brands that they're trying, but maybe they're a small brand and it's not easy. So, and some brands have more funding to go all the way because it's really expensive to manufacture ethically and sustainably. That's because the fashion industry doesn't make it easy. It's not always the fault of the brands. local small brands that are trying to do the right thing, I think support them first. They might not be on Good On You because they're still small, but if we support them in what they're trying to achieve, they will get there. And they're the ones who would go out of their way to make sure, you know, everyone's paid a livable wage. So it's not just about looking at the bigger brands who can afford to pay for their brand to be audited, to be put on, you know, some of these platforms or get the certifications, because that's an expense in itself. And sometimes smaller brands don't have the, not just funding, but the enough resources, enough staff to handle those other issues, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't 100% say it's just about Good On You or a similar app. It's also you doing a little bit of work, you doing a little bit with the local brands around you, the local designers, the little ones, the little student ones that just come out but absolutely are trying their best to do it the right way. Support that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, support the very, very small brands, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that if they had the funding of the bigger brands, a fraction of funding of the bigger brands, they would be doing phenomenally well, but they just don't have that. So let's support them in getting bigger and support them in creating a more sustainable fashion future. So if they're the ones that become the main brands, then you can just imagine that it'll change the status quo, right? It'll change the system. So,
yeah. Yeah, thank you. Because that's something I kind of, you know, battle with. I'm like, oh, this brand that I like doesn't have a great rate or has an okay rating, but it's not as good as this other really big brand. Which one should I buy from? The multi-million dollar conglomerate or this little brand?
I'm all for supporting local designers because they might not be 100% sustainable, but it's not easy for them to be sustainable when they don't have the funding, right? Mm. You can support them and then, you know, just kind of not tell the brands what to do, but it sort of emphasize that message, that idea of sustainability, and they're more likely to follow through when they're able to, right? Mm-hmm. They probably don't want to use any polyester in their manufacturing, but probably they're using secondhand in their manufacturing, and some of it is polyester, some of it is synthetics. Because to buy brand new sustainably made fabric is expensive because it's done the right way, and that's how it should be, right? So, but when they can afford to, probably they will buy the brand new sustainably plant-based fabrics, right? So that's what I mean by, you know, supporting local designers in your area if they're not even 100%. I think that's the way to go. If you know that they're sustainably minded and they're trying, support them. Mm. You know, shop with all those. Right. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all of those tips and how we can, you know, be a bit more conscious about our consumption without having to cut it off completely. But I would love to know, what is a practice you do to manage your own fashion consumption?
To manage my own fashion and consumption, I have, first of all, I have to say I have a pretty big wardrobe, right? It's all manufactured, it's all mostly secondhand and vintage. And it's been acquired over several years. But having said that, I can probably count on one hand the amount of times I've thrown away a garment into the trash. That's not mm-hmm. something that I grew up with. It's not part of my mindset. So, but then I also work in this space of sustainability, of fashion, and teach it. So I'm not sort of your average person. And I've run a lot of clothes swaps. So I've, you know, rescued stuff from there, particularly vintage stuff that I'm afraid will go to landfill. So in terms of how I manage it, I have a system of where I know myself so well that if I'm acquiring a garment, I know that even though I don't use it at that moment, it'll be very key for something I'm going to use in the future. So whether it's an event, a workshop, a show. So that's part of the reason why I have a big wardrobe, because it's part of my career as well. But managing that, some things I have in some suitcases, like in categories, like vintage ball gowns. Now, I do not wear a ball gown every day, particularly a vintage one, but I have quite a few of them and I keep them in a suitcase. They're just there. But when it's time to use it for a show or whatever, then that's when I bring it out. So I have a system of, like, you know, of course, seasons, right? Where I am in Sydney, we're heading into we're heading into, well, spring. I guess we're in spring now. So I bring out stuff that, you know, is tailored to the weather. However, I have a lot of stuff that's suitable for spring, right? And the way I manage it is that it's through a gut feel, because I'm not going to bring out all the dresses I have because I won't use them all this season. So I feel like, I wore this. Sometimes I just feel like, oh, I've been wearing this a lot. I'm kind of tired of it. But I don't, for me, if I'm bored or something, it doesn't mean I'm going to get rid of it. I still love it. I'm just tired of wearing it right now. So I'm going to put it away in a different suitcase where I have other spring stuff that I'm not, spring, summer stuff that I'm not using right now. And it's going to stay there. Possibly sometimes I won't use it again for 2 years, maybe even three. But when I do bring it out again, it's honestly like a brand new item to me. That's how it feels like. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I haven't worn this dress in 3 years. I love it. So for me, it's like brand. It feels brand new in that moment, and then I wear it again. So it's like my clothes are in cycles, right? So I don't shop and then dispose of after a year or a few months. I shop secondhand mostly or vintage. Then when I'm tired of it, I put it away, and then bring out something else that I haven't worn in a long time. So my wardrobe is like comes in cycles, right? I do get rid of stuff, but it's things that I know that just are, when I wear it, I get like an intuitive feeling of like, this just does not vibe with my soul anymore. I don't know. There must be something about it. Like I just know intuitively that I'd never want to wear this again. And then I find another home for it. Either I take it to a clothes swap, or I sometimes go to markets where I have a stall from stuff left over from clothes swaps that people can come and take. And usually people take stuff and you can tell they love it. It's something they're going to use. Mm-hmm. So I'll take it there or give it to a friend. So that's how I manage my wardrobe. It's unconventional, but then again, it's because my wardrobe is very much attached to my career. So I kind of run it differently from the average person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do love the idea of, putting away clothes that you're maybe bored with for a few years and then bring it out again and sort of like shopping your wardrobe.
Yeah.
It still gives you that kind of boost where you're like, oh, a new thing to wear.
Exactly.
Without actually buying a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I love that term, shopping your wardrobe. And this is the thing with people who get bored of their stuff. You're not going to be bored of it forever. You know, you might put it away and discover it again one day. And what's interesting is the fashion industry does that. The fashion industry actually, you know how like recycles trends? The fashion industry itself does that with their trend cycles. You know, something is not trending now and then it'll come back into fashion a few years later. And I hear people all the time be like, oh, I should have kept my, you know, plaid check dress because now it's back in fashion. But and this is why fashion is so wasteful, because things come into trend. Fast fashion, makes so much of it in that moment. Every store you go to has a variation of the same thing because it's trending. And then people buy it, wear it a few times, the trend goes away in a short period of time. And then all the whatever's trending, let's say plaid dresses, they go to the landfill. And then we're on to the next thing and on to the next thing. And that's why so many clothes are ended up in landfill, because we're following fashion trends, right? And by the way, people say to me stuff like, I don't follow fashion trends. Well, if you are constantly buying brand new stuff on a regular basis, you are following fashion trends, because those are manufactured based on trends, right? So you might not be looking at the Instagram of whoever the trendsetters are, but you're indirectly following fashion trends, right? Overconsumption is a fashion trend, is a modern cultural fashion trend, right? It is. And I coined a term called the fashion treadmill, and this is exactly what it means. Buying brand new clothes constantly, whether you're intentionally keeping up with trends or not, but that's the fashion treadmill. And we need to get off the fashion treadmill. We need to manufacture less clothing. We need to wear what we have, love what we wear. And then when we're done with it, you know, either give it to somebody else, or swap it, donate it, but make sure it stays in circularity for as long as possible. than out of landfill, right?
And what do you do, you know, after, you know, you've worn this t-shirt to death, you know, you got it from your friend who gave it to you, and now you've worn it and worn it, and there's holes in it, and it's pajamas, and
unwearable.
It's unwearable. Yeah. Is there anything that you can do to that afterwards?
Yeah, so there are some organizations that shred clothing that and use it for other purposes, whether, I don't know, roads, furniture blocks, walls in building insulation, different things, right? So you can, there's a few of them. There's one called Recycle, and that's spelled capital R, R-C-Y-C-L, Recycle. Mm-hmm. They're Melbourne based. There's Upcycle for Better. There's Apparel. And there's Textile Recyclers Australia.
There Great, might be thank others. You.
And then there's Block Texts. So they take stuff like that and supposedly have it shredded to reuse for other purposes. And Block Texts is one that can separate, like, if you have like a garment that's made of like polyester, cotton, like fabric blend, polyester and cotton, they're able to separate on a granular level. It's really cool how they do it. But cool. Yeah, so that material can be recycled.
Great. Thank you. And we'll put those links in the show notes so that everyone can find them, even if they're spelt a bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And if our listeners want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
So my website is ecostyles.com.au. But the best place to find me is on Instagram. And my Instagram is eco.styles with an S at the end. Yeah, or just Google Nina Gabor. And some one of those platforms should come up. I'm on LinkedIn. And yeah. Those are probably the best places to go to.
Great, thank you. And again, we'll also share those links on our show notes so that people can find you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Room by Room, produced by the Home Organization Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes like this from across 10 life management perspectives can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, and other podcasting apps available on your smart devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it so we can grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at ho.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Gabriella Yastra. Thanks for tuning in.